I think we're about to start now. Are you ready that we can start? Okay, fine. Procedurally, what I'll request in order to know each other better, it is better to start our procedure with a very normal style by introducing ourselves so that we can know exactly at whom are we speaking to and so that we can know each other better than what it is at the moment. I'll start on my left hand side. That front at the back. Oh, sorry, we'll start here, go this way. Following seat back till at the end. Use the mic.
Mabija and NCOP member.
Ronnie Khoza, CEO CIDP.
Raymond Nkado, the chairperson of CIDP.
Peter Mongwenyana, CIDP CFO.
Of the NCIP delegate.
I'm Herman Groenewald, member of the committee.
Met Priscilla Kembam, member of the committee.
Redau, member of the committee in Northern Cape.
General Moso, parliamentarizing officer, Ministry of Public Works.
Pumza Ngana, MPG. PMG.
Police are the committee associate.
My name is Jochie Bruce. I'm from the Gauteng Legislature. I'm the chairperson of the Infrastructure Development Committee.
I'm Zoran Lenz. I'm a member of the committee from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Dirk Fjordman, member of the committee, Gauteng.
I'm the committee's officer. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the question. Please introduce yourself.
Claudine Adams, committee secretary.
My name is Patrick Sibande, chairperson of the NCOP Select Committee. Colleagues and members, first of all, I'd like to maybe to apologize because of some service providers. They sent us tea very late. I'm told that tea is waiting outside, and I know very well that people are from very far, they didn't grasp whatever. But what I would propose at the present moment, if we can grab something and bring insight, then so that you can continue with the meeting. Let us spend only 5 minutes to grab and come inside so that you can continue with our meeting.
Yeah. MPG or PG, which one?
He was intimidated by the general in front of
him.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee. This is the first time that the Construction Industry Development Board is presenting to the NCOP, and I will just say quite frankly that we are delighted. We appreciate the opportunity, and we thank you very much for making the time to listen to us. We are an entity of the Department of Public Works and therefore an entity of government. The CIDB exists by an act of parliament and has a specific mandate in terms of what it should accomplish in our country's economy. We are both a regulatory entity and a developmental entity. We know that the construction industry is critical, the critical sector of the economy for job creation and for economic growth. And we are very conscious of our role in both the regulatory aspect and the developmental aspect in facilitating government's objectives in this area of economic growth and job creation. We are also conscious of the role of the Construction Industry Development Board in overseeing health and safety issues and other pertinent issues in the industry. So we welcome this opportunity to explain to you the strategic direction that we have, to explain to you the business plan, how we are going about our business, how we are responding to the changing economic and social environment, and to reach out to you to help you to understand our role, and to also perhaps give you an indication of where we would appreciate your support in doing our work better. So I would like to hand over this stage to the Chief Executive Officer to take you through the presentation, And then, of course, we would welcome your questions for clarification afterwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, colleagues. The approach to the presentation will be structured according to this slide, presentation content. But beyond this, we would like to engage with you to discuss the challenges that we face in the industry. There are exciting opportunities, there are also challenges. And right at the end of the presentation, we would like to then deal with that. But also at the end, I will allow our CFO to take us through the budget of 2009-2010, as well as the MTM period. And I would like to thank you for the opportunity. As the chairperson has just said, we are delighted to be presenting to you. Although the brief was for us to take you through our strategic plan, we, after communicating with Mr. Adam Tombini, we felt that it would be a good opportunity to deal with it almost holistically, look at the business plan and also look at the budget. It is a number of years since the CRDB was established, and we still face quite a number of problems because our country is a developing one. And the challenges that would be taking you through are actually within the context. Now, if we look at the presentation content, we'll deal with the overview, and I will not go through all the slides. For instance, I will deal with the distilled mandate and then the new vision, mission, and strategy. I'll just contextualize those, but I won't go into detail, except perhaps for the vision, because it actually illustrates where we are going. Then the external context for 2009-2010, internal context for the same year, strategic objectives, operational plan, and then key focus for 2009-2010, which would help us see how the budget was actually put together. Performance measurement is just one slide that illustrates how we actually set targets. And then risk and fraud, which is a relatively new area in terms of our focus, but obviously risk and fraud is part of organizations all the time. CRDB is without exception to that, and then we'll deal with the budget. The distinct mandate of the CRDB is to provide strategic leadership and enabling regulatory and development framework for a total construction delivery capability to achieve South Africa's economic and social growth. And we believe that is important. Sustainable growth and empowerment of historically disadvantaged, and in the context of what is happening these days that we'll share with you later on, I think it's very important to understand that. Global standards of performance and value to clients and society. We need to have a critical balance between global standards as well as what pertains to this developing country. Therefore, the CRDB has a dual responsibility, and that is as an enabler or developer, which is work in progress. The CRDB, since it was started, this is the area of focus that has been highlighted. The second one is that of a regulator or enforcer of compliance. As a regulator, when we started with the development of the construction industry, the regulation was also part of it, but the enforcement of compliance is a very strong element, which is a new focus. We'll share with you issues around fraud and corruption and what the CRDB has actually done in that direction. So this actually illustrates a change in direction, which is critical to demonstrate value add in the industry. Otherwise, people would not see the value that we are adding. In terms of the vision of the CRDB, we decided in 2007, in November, to pull together staff that normally attend what we call the strategic focus meeting, and we felt that we all had to change together, and to date, we can see the improvement because staff have actually started taking ownership in the way that they deal with the stakeholders. I'll just read this one only, I will not read the mission. The vision is dealing with internal focus as well as external focus. We call it Vision 2012 and beyond because we're saying by 2012 we must have achieved these things that we're talking about but we need to move ahead beyond 2012 to make sure that we deliver quality service. It is a dynamic, innovative, and development organization that provides strategic leadership and an efficient service to stakeholders, leading to a transformed and competitive construction industry that delivers quality infrastructure, promotes economic growth, and an organization that is caring for its employees. You will see that the vision is crafted around the mandate of the CRDB, but begins to talk about other areas that, for instance, the Act may not be highlighting. Because we believe that we work with people that make a difference, that is our employees, so we wanted to emphasize that. But also to say the organization itself should be a dynamic, innovative, and development organization that provides the highlight of our mandate, that is strategic leadership, and then an efficient service to stakeholders. The mission is also linked to the vision, but I will not go into it, except to say that our focus is geared towards SMMEs, because all over the world, successful economies actually drive their economies through small enterprises. In terms of the external context, we believe that we should be providing supporting interventions in terms of infrastructure delivery skills. You know that South Africa has lost quite a lot of skills in this industry due to a number of years of not being dynamic and a lack of infrastructure, until that started turning around after the middle of the 90s. And it is very important, therefore, to say for us to begin to have relevant and adequate skills, there's a lot of work that must be done. And therefore, we're actually focusing in that area. We work with quite a number of organizations that are involved in the development of skills. The CRDB has worked with the department as well as CBE in crafting what we call the National Strategy in Skills Development, which I believe the department would actually be carrying forward. It's been presented at the HOD's forum as well as MINMEC. Public sector delivery, it's one thing to say let us improve, for instance, the procurement regime in the industry. But what we found is that even if you have very good engineers, you still need them to align planning with the engineering skills that they have. So you take very good engineers and show them how to actually align planning. But what we found is that in the past, we found that what used to happen is that you have good engineers, they budget on a year-to-year basis, and then when money is not being made available for a particular project which is running across a number of years, then the project will actually stall. Since we started a program called IDIP, that is Infrastructure Delivery Improvement Program, we've worked with the Department of Public Works in the provinces as well as the Department of Education. That's where we started. And then we then extended that to the Department of Public Works as the implementing agent, working with the Department of Health. We now want to roll this out to municipalities. I'll share more information later on. And this has actually made a difference because it is beginning to remove bottlenecks that were actually not that visible in the past because an analysis, a cop analysis had not been done. Stakeholder analysis and management, we need to understand all the different stakeholders and the roles that they play. If you look at our logo, it says development through partnership, because any one organization in South Africa cannot achieve all the results of moving away from an old apartheid regime to a democratic state that we have now without working with others. If you look at our mandate, for instance, a lot of people would say Construction Industry Development Board, it means you develop contractors. But because we cannot, or we are not mandated to award contracts to contractors, we cannot do full development. So what is expected of the CRDB is to come up with a development framework within which clients with their specific projects as well as the established sector could actually contribute. So it's very important to understand that while we are called a development board, we do not go out there and develop contractors directly. We develop a framework and we guide the kind of development that must actually happen. But there are other stakeholders, for instance, that we work with, the construction sector would be responsible for training. but CRDP plays a role. We've recently signed an MOU with them because we believe that they are very critical stakeholder to the construction industry. We work with the CBE, the Council for the Built Environment, with its six member councils, because we believe that there are certain requirements where they would actually play a role and make sure that what the CRDP does would actually have impact. So we consistently analyze our stakeholders and make sure that in terms of how we manage stakeholders, we make impact. The CRDP Act requires that the CRDP be reviewed by an independent panel at least once every 5 years. In 2007, towards the end of January, beginning of February, we had the first opportunity for an independent panel to review the work that had been done by the CRDP. They came up with a number of recommendations and commended the CRDP for the work that it had done up to that far, and obviously recommended things that must be improved. And we are waiting on the implementation of those until the next review of the CRDP, which we estimate will be at the beginning of 2012. Internal context, operation and growth of the Register of Contractors, that's the Register of Contractors. I would like to illustrate this with the graph that we're going to show very soon, but it's important to understand that the CRDP has specific mandates. One of the mandates that we have is to establish and maintain the Register of Contractors. Unfortunately, that's the area that we are well known for. The other areas become less important in the public's eye. We also have another register, the Register of Projects, that I'll talk about later on. So these two registers, the Register of Contractors and the Register of Projects, were the first two registers that the CRDP established, and they are active registers, obviously with the Register of Contractors being the most dynamic. We have a number of problems with the Register of Projects. I will share the information with you later on, because the clients, that is government departments, municipalities, and state-owned entities that are involved in infrastructure, they must actually take care of that register. We may be battling with capacity where and staff turnover, where we go and capacitate staff, and after 3 months, 6 months, we find that they've changed, and therefore we must go and train people from scratch again. Specialization. This industry requires a certain level of specialization. Apart from just having engineers, we deal with knowledge here that we share with the industry, and we need people that will be able to specialize. The alternative is that we would actually continue to use consultants who can actually come at exorbitant rates. So within this CRDP, we have now established a number of areas where we use internal resources to make sure that we save on costs, but there are still areas where you need consultants with more than 20 years experience in the industry, and the CRDP obviously would not have that. It's very difficult to get these people to be employed by the CRDP, and therefore at very strategic areas we would actually appoint consultants for their expertise. Risk exposure. The CRDP was established by an Act of Parliament at 38 of 2000. But it was actually in November 2001 that the first board was appointed and the first CEO was appointed. Obviously, you start with procedures, policies, until you reach a point where you can start working with your stakeholders. The first registration of contractors happened in 2004 with a pilot that was run in Limpopo. The second pilot was run with Ethekwini Metro in 2005. And for the rest of the year, the national departments as well as provincial departments had to comply. The state-owned enterprises like ESCOM and Transnet also had to comply by the end of that calendar year. In 2006, we started with the municipalities, including the metros, and the application was staggered until the end of the year. So you can see that already by now, all public sector clients, government departments, municipalities, and state-owned enterprises should have complied. That is why we're actually phasing in now the enforcement of compliance, but at a very strategic level to make sure that we do not destroy the gains that we've already made. But it's a project that we're driving at high speed. The next point in terms of internal context is business systems. The CRDB stores quite a lot of hard copy information. Contractors complete forms when they apply. They could do it electronically as well as completing the hard copy forms. What we've realized is that we need a lot of storage space, and we've decided that in order to deal with that situation, as well as curb fraud and corruption, we need to implement what we call EDMS, Electronic Document Management System. It's a project that has been prioritized. We are now at the stage where we are starting with the implementation, and therefore we'll save on storage costs, but also when contractors have submitted documents, we can just go into the system and see what they have submitted, and that will actually take care of potential fraud by staff members who may end up soliciting bribes from contractors if that happens. And then CRS stands for Construction Register Service. It's the Registers Department, if I may call it that. You'll see how it fits in the whole organization later on. The software was actually designed to take not more than 100,000 registrations. And we have hit 100,000 already. We had to do a minor modification at this stage so that we can actually accommodate more than 100,000 registrations. But we still need to make sure that the software responds to all the different areas of development. For instance, we have a new register that we are producing regulations for. Therefore, we want to establish a different platform that can assist in terms of plug-ins where these are required for other registers going into the future. This graph illustrates how steep the growth has been, starting from December 2004, where we had 1,500 registered contractors, and remember, this was affecting Limpopo Public Works only, to about end of March, where we had more than 80,000 registrations. I'm talking registrations as opposed to contractors. A contractor can register in more than one class of works. You'll find the contractor that is registered in general building, civil engineering, and mechanical engineering. So there would be three registrations against that particular contractor. So you'll always find that we talk more about the registrations, but I'll show you slides that can depict to you how many actual contractors do we have and how many registrations do we have today as active registrations. As I indicated, this is just to show you how fast the growth has been, and this has therefore been a challenge to the CRDB personnel as well as assistants, because we expected to have between 10,000 and about 12,000 registered contractors at this stage. And if I show you these slides, then you'll begin to understand that we do face a challenge that we've had to manage. We had to manage the employment of people, because you don't just throw money and people had a problem. You need to make sure that you balance the number of people you have with a quality service that you want to deliver. This slide, I'm not going to go into too much detail. It merely illustrates to you that the total number of active registrations by September 2009 stood at more than 92,000. But the actual number of registrations, including those that may have been suspended for various reasons, was actually standing just above 100,000. Now, when I say some may be suspended, a contractor might forget to submit a tax clearance certificate to make sure that the registration is valid all the time. And they get sent reminders, and they may take long to submit these tax clearance certificates. They would get automatically suspended and automatically unsuspended when they have submitted these documents. So it's a number that is dynamic. It changes every day, but we manage it well. Perhaps what is important for us to highlight here is that there have been almost 5,000 upgrades on the register of contractors to date since the register was established. Black-owned enterprises constitute about 84% of all the upgrades. I just need to indicate that we're unpacking this number. We want to make sure that when people upgrade, it's a true upgrade. In other words, They were given a grade. They've worked on projects for a period of 2 years. They come back to the CIDB and say, I've completed this project. My turnover is improved. I'm now applying for the next grade, and then we assess them, and that gives them the grade that they qualify for. But among these contractors, you find those that are not familiar with business documents. In other words, you have to tell them a number of times what the format of the document should be, that it must be on letterhead if it's required to be like that, that it must be an original if it's required to be like that. Now, a contractor could apply for a grade 7, and we don't turn anybody away. We may actually give them a grade 2 based on the documents they've submitted, and we'll advise them what documents they must then submit. They could submit in the next 2 weeks, in the next 3 months, documents that will then take them back to the grade that they had applied for. So it's a very dynamic environment. So that figure there includes all kinds of upgrades, including those where contractors may not have provided the right documentation. Again, it's interesting to see in the first row, grade 1, that we have more than 81,000. They constitute about 80% of the total registrations. If you remove grade 1, you actually remain with a figure between 10 and 12,000 registrations that I was talking about. It's a very interesting piece of information because we begin to understand what is happening. For instance, when we took a decision to say grade 1 contractors must not take the same period of time as a grade 9 to be registered, that is 21 working days. We changed it because we saw that there was less risk from them, and therefore they now register over the counter, and within 48 hours they get activated on the system. That system has been working so well that we now do not have contractors coming to us and coming to us for a registration certificate, which we did away with from January last year. But we've done away with the CIDB certificate for all grades because it was beginning to be a prompt for corruption. We found that a number of people were actually producing CIDB certificates and selling them to contractors. So what the clients do is they visit our website at a time when they want to do adjudication to check if contractors are registered with us. This slide shows grading by province. It would show you from grade 1 up to grade 9, and also includes international companies, which today stand at 25 across all grades. So if you want to see, for instance, that in the Eastern Cape we have so many grade 1, so many grade 3s, and so many grade 9, and you can also see the total. You can look at KwaZulu-Natal, which actually tops the pack at the moment with more than 25,000 registrations. And we started in Limpopo, but Limpopo was overtaken by Gauteng. Later on, all of them were overtaken by KwaZulu-Natal. It either shows that development is happening better in KwaZulu-Natal, and therefore we're sharing information about what is happening there. There are various programs that could actually lead to this. And therefore we request department to actually drive contractor development to make sure that they support for contractors. It's not just the numbers that we're interested in, but numbers and quality at the same time. This is the slide that I was referring to, the actual number of companies. You can see that the total at the bottom is more than 72,000. So while we're expecting between 10 and 12,000 registered contractors, actual contractors, and as I indicated, we see that more than 100,000 registrations, or more than 92,000 active registrations. When we talk about contractors, actual contractors, it's more than 72,000, and it is quite a big number. And again, grade 1 constitute the biggest number there. Strategic objectives. What we want to do at a strategic level is to make sure that the organization is adequately capacitated. The first few years of the CIDB were such a challenge where you could not even have program managers that would head departments that we call programs. It led to slow delivery, which we've turned around, and we're now moving very fast. People have specific projects. But what is important also is that you need people who will actually stay on the job, and it's only after a period of about 2 years that you'll actually begin to see value coming out of those people. So staff turnover could actually be a very negative factor for the CIDB because we specialize in this area. There are people who will deal with industry information. There are people who will deal with research, and therefore they need to understand the context of the research we talk about. And then research and development agenda. No organization including the private sector companies, should be able to survive without doing research that supports its business. We believe that in the case of the CRDP, we will do it for the CRDP as well as for the industry. We decided that we need to work with academic institutions that are focused on research and in general research organizations to make sure that we lift the research and development agenda and make sure that it becomes relevant. We need to be innovative to see which materials should actually be used in this industry that would be cost effective and save government a lot of money. If we don't do that, we'll never know. We'll depend on other countries and those people that want to import materials from other countries that we do not know how they will survive here. Phase two of the registers is an activity that is legislated for, where it's supposed to improve the performance of the industry in terms of establishing best practice for contractors and best practice for clients. We've moved a long way. I'll show you tables that show what has been done already. We're at the stage where we want to roll this out and to focus on quality, health and safety in the construction industry, as well as environmental management. And those issues, we believe, are at a stage where they must be developed now, because the phase one, where we just wanted to register contractors, we were very focused on the numbers at that time, but now we need to move into value-added quality services so that the industry can see value-add. And then procurement reform. Procurement reform deals with how procurement must be done by all government departments. Today, since the CRDP established the standard for uniformity, all government departments that are involved in infrastructure actually do it in a structured way, whether it's telecom building their offices, whether it's ESCOM building power stations, public works, building schools, on behalf of the Department of Education, they all must use the CRDP requirement. And there's a special regulation in the PFMA and the MFMA that when it comes to construction-related procurement, they must use CRDP requirement. This is the structure of the CRDP at a high level, with the CEO reporting to the board, mainly through the chairperson, and then four core programs, and then and then corporate services, the last one. The first one, the growth and contract development, looks after the growth of the industry. Contract development framework is actually sitting in that unit. The provincial offices that we have now established are managed through that unit. Construction industry performance, this is where research in the industry is coordinated. This is where knowledge about the industry is coordinated, and that is the future of the CRDP. Phase two of the registers is actually hosted by that program. The third one is procurement delivery. It's actually procurement and delivery management, PDM. We just used procurement delivery for short. That one is responsible for the standard for uniformity, which standardizes the method of procurement in the construction industry, takes care of the delivery that we're driving through IDIP, working with National Treasury, DBSA, as well as Department of Public Works. The last one is registers, or CRS, Construction Register Service. That is where all the registers will be housed. The two that are active right now, Register of Contractors, Register of Projects, and then the one that's coming up during the course of next year, that is the Register of Professional Service Providers or Consultants in the built environment. There are two other registers that we may establish later on, the Register of Manufacturers and the Register of Suppliers, and then we'll actually be able to regulate the whole value chain. The last program there is led by the CFO, that's corporate services. I will not go into these details because I'll explain them, but I just want to illustrate in terms of corporate services, which is this slide. That corporate services has four main components. It's financial management, including registered fees, which is a very, very busy activity. Human resources administration, which is a new unit that has been established by the CRDP as a fully fledged unit. Supply chain management, which we are beefing up, and again, it's a fully fledged unit now. In the past, we would have people working in supply chain management coming from corporate services, but without a properly constituted unit. information technology. Information technology is very crucial for the CIDP. For instance, as we establish the provincial offices, you can actually run a workshop from head office and use video conferencing to all the different offices around the country. We currently have 7 that have been launched officially and 2 that are operating as help desks. It's one in Limpopo, which will be launched perhaps before the end of this year, and then one in Northwest, where they're still wrestling with procurement issues. Now, it's very important to understand that we will actually save a lot of money here. We have an office here in Cape Town. If you have a chance to visit it, we would invite you to do that. They're at Conradorp and I'll actually get the street address for you. You will actually see how things are happening there. It has actually challenged the provincial department to the point that they may actually want to relocate the office to some bigger place. These offices play a crucial role, and also our information technology is very crucial in the sense that when clients want to appoint contractors, they need to visit our website, and our website must never be down. I'll just highlight these ones. Key focus for 2009-2010, contractor registration in terms of continuous improvement. We are currently engaged in various programs that improve the processing of applications. Our ideal is to see online registrations with links to SARS, links to CPRO, so that it does not take 21 or up to 21 working days to register a contractor. I believe that we can even do it within a week, within 2 weeks, if we have the right online system. Project registration, this is the second active project. It was slow at the beginning because as soon as it was started, the CIDP, through the Minister of Public Works then, introduced relaxations that were supposed to go until the 15th of November 2007. That phase has passed, but there was no system to actually say when the relaxations have been done away with, what do we then do? We're waiting on that. We want to make sure that we collect revenue from the register of projects or all the services that CIDP is actually using, which will take us to the last bullet point, then the revenue model that we are establishing. But there is a lot that we've had to remove to fine-tune the revenue model, where we charge clients, and not contractors now, but clients, for the total value add that we provide to the industry, including what they get from the register of contractors, where they're not paying it. But also in terms of the register of projects, the information that would be actually situated there. We are reprioritizing the list of projects so that all these good things that we want to do can actually be done through that, and there's been massive improvement for the last 2 years. I'll quickly go through this one. We want to continue with public sector procurement reform, telling public sector clients on how to change procurement. The Register of Professional Service Providers is the new baby in terms of registers with the CIDP, and we're actually establishing regulations now. We would like to pilot early next year and then begin to roll out. Compliance enforcement, a very important area for the CIDP. It's taking a lot of our budget. We find that certain clients were not complying, and now that they are complying, the contractors are not happy because they cannot get the project through the people that they used to know before, but everybody seems to now be complying. Public sector delivery improvement, as I said, IDIP working with the Department of Public Works in the provinces, whatever they are called nowadays, because they are different, and the Department of Education, and then the Department of Health. Municipalities will prove to be a big challenge. What we are doing at the moment to make sure that everybody gets to know about IDIP is that we requested that the provinces must begin to report to the premiers. They must report at MINMET, for instance, so that CIDP gets a copy of those reports, as opposed to what was happening in the past, where they would actually tell the CIDP what they are doing and expect CIDP to tell others what has been done. We believe that provinces are investing a lot of money within themselves, and therefore the premiers should actually begin to know where the money is actually being spent and what development is provided to contractors, and what service delivery is also done that way. National Infrastructure Maintenance Strategy. This was launched last year in May. There's not been good movement, but we're working with the department to make sure this happens. First, there was a problem with the budget. A budget has been approved now, but we need to make sure that in the last 6 months of this year, we actually do use that budget. Initially, the CRDB was expected to project manage this until we had certain problems that we had to sort out, clarify with the department, so there was a slowdown, but we're actually reviving it now. Phase two of the register that I've spoken about, best practice contractor recognition scheme, as well as the best practice project assessment scheme, which will look at quality, health and safety and environment, as well as benchmarking to make sure that what we do is actually reasonable compared to others in the world, others within the country, and we are promoting regional collaboration. This is the slide that talks to best contractor recognition. We want to recognize contractors that have done well as an incentive. We'll work with the departments who will provide information about those contractors that have done well. But we also want to assess the competence of contractors. In South Africa, it's very strange, but I think it was supposed to be that way to support contractors that were never in the built environment before. In other countries, no contractor is allowed to register in any class of work without demonstrating competence in that area. So we want to introduce that in South Africa, but introduce it strategically, not forcing contractors or clients to use it, but giving them an opportunity to see those that have competence in their particular area. We want to look at those that have accredited management systems to make sure that delivery actually happens within budget, within the estimated time. Performance reports will have to be completed. The same thing, and these are actually happening at different levels of registration. For instance, when we start with grade two, and not grade one, but grade one, we take it as artisan training. Start with grade two up to say grade four, we'll actually do the competence assessment. Things become stricter as you go up because you need to comply with the health and safety standards. A lot of people actually die unnecessarily because clients and contractors are not actually applying themselves very well when it comes to health and safety. So the second one is, it looks very similar, but it's structured differently. The standard for uniformity, we already have at the CRDB, so it's a matter of just enforcing that. Performance report would have to be completed by the public sector, and then a number of other issues, including the development of skills. This information will be made available for each and every project and will assess the performance of project management by clients on this basis, and I believe that the quality of infrastructure will improve on that basis. So you can see that we're beginning to introduce quality, monitoring of quality, health and safety gradually to make sure that we don't push those that did not understand what happens in this industry out. We want them to participate, but we need to make sure that people don't die because we don't have standards. Key focus, I'm now leading towards the end. Key focus for this financial year is to establish the Employment Skills Development Agency, which is normally developed and maintained by the CTAS of the different sectors. In our case, we were requested by industry to do it because the construction sector was not actually focusing in that direction. We had a problem with funding. We've applied through the NSF to get funding. We are looking at the construction sector after we signed an MOU with them to see if we can get funding because this is related to training and development. Now, I've spoken to the CEO of the CETA, and he would actually be giving us guidelines on the basis of the MOU that we've signed, so CRDB can have a special preference and have access to this money. Now, this ESTA is very crucial in developing skills in the country. It will take care of graduates, for instance, who don't have experiential training, and assist them and place them in proper organizations where they can get this training. A lot of people go to technicons or former technicons, now University of Technology, and they cannot even graduate because they do not have experiential training that is required for them to graduate. So this ESTA will actually facilitate that. It will not be a CRDB ESTA, but it will be an industry ESTA. We'll make sure that we just facilitate the establishment and allow industry to run it. Human resources development, we need to keep staff, we need to train our staff because it takes a long time to develop a CRDB staff member, especially in the specialization areas. Internal audit processes have been beefed up, as well as risk and corporate governance. We have employed for the first time a risk and governance manager who is taking care of risk and corporate governance. And in terms of how management must see this, we've made sure that the majority of managers are registered with the Institute of Directors to make sure that we stay abreast with any developments in this area. EDMS, I've spoken about it, project database. We're a knowledge-based organization. We believe that we need to have a proper database that is managed to avoid duplications, and it's a project that has also been prioritized. Contractor development, very crucial point. We have established the National Contractor Development Program, NCDP, as a framework. We've rolled it out, but we find that some clients are not keen to take it as is. We've modified it. We've established what we call the Provincial Contractor Development Forum, which are chaired by Public Works in the provinces, and the CRDP participates as a secretariat. The construction contact centers, for the first time, we now have outside of head office as such, we have provincial offices, which are called construction contact centers. As I said, 7 have been launched officially, and 2 will actually be launched, I would say, Limpopo in the next few months, and Northwest, we need to understand what's happening with their procurement system. We want to then introduce value add through the construction contact centers. I've just been given the address for our office. It's Connor Long and Dodge Street. The address is 140 Long Street. If you would like to go there anytime, you're welcome to do that. We also have in our legislation that we must have what we call the stakeholder forum, which must be constituted through CIDB advertising for nominations by different sectors. We've had up to now 4 different stakeholder forums, that is the meetings where the stakeholders who are nominated advise the minister and the CRDB and board in terms of the priority areas that must be looked at. The next stakeholder forum for this year will be on the 23rd of October, and would like to extend an invitation. We'll actually send a formal letter to the chairperson, and those members that are able to attend would like to encourage them to do so. The nominations have been slow, like it always happens. We end up having to lobby specific people to assist. Our focus is that those people must have expertise in their particular area, or they must represent others, and therefore they can talk on behalf of a number of people. And the critical point is they must go back and report on what the CREP is doing. We're changing the format a bit to make sure that this is effective. We also want to talk about general stakeholder engagement. We find that there are still people that don't understand about CREP to date, and we go out to talk to them. But obviously, it must be done within budget. The 5-year review recommendations are being implemented, like I indicated before. We've just had a 5-year review of the CREP. The next one will happen at the beginning of 2012. In terms of performance measurement, I would like to just show this slide, which indicates the particular program. We have 4 core programs. We now have corporate services included for the first time. So it would actually indicate what we call a program is actually a department. And then we'd have a strategic project where we describe that particular project, operational objective, what we're trying to achieve, and then a target by when this should be done. Now, CREP has a bit of a challenge in this area because some of the things we do are actually ongoing, and therefore when you set a deadline, you may be saying we'll do it until that date. But these things are multi-year performance issues, and therefore you may see sometimes that we look at the 31st of March because there must be these continuous improvements. But if it's a specific project, we'll then give a specific deadline, like you see by the 31st of December 2010. And I know that we won't be at work on that date, but by that date, some of these things must happen. Just an example. Risk and fraud, we have newly established a committee, which is a subcommittee of the board. We've included the CEO and the CFO, as well as the new risk and governance manager as part of management to assist in the risk committee. And already we've done quite a lot of good work. The committee is chaired by a board member. We are going through the process of identifying the risks, and that process is almost complete. In terms of the budget, I would like to hand over to our CFO to take us through that.
Thank you, Chair. The numbers are over 4 years, what you've put up here. The current year of 2009 and 2010, 2011, 2011-12, and the outer year of 2012-13. And this all sits in our vote. That's our budget vote as it stands right now. Our revenue is made up of two main streams. We've got registered revenue, which is what we could call own-generated revenue through registrations that take place. And there's also transfer payments that come from government. And a little bit of interest that we raise through funds that we put up with the banks. Registered revenue on average over the 4 years, you'll see, constitutes 40%. And government's portion would be about 58%, and 2% is interest revenue. And for the current year, you're looking at 95.5 million. The makeup or the breakup of this revenue, how we're going to be using it, it's going to be on personnel cost of 42.7 million, admin expenditure of 22.1 million, capital expenditure of 3 million, and operational cost of 27.5. Operational cost is mostly the projects that the CEO has actually spoken about, all those projects that we embark on that we are measured, or that our performance is measured on. Is all is that line item, operational cost of 27.5. Capital cost, 3 million. You will also notice that it's actually going down in the next few years. That's because of the mainly rollout of the CCC offices. On average, in CCC office IT cost will be about 1.2 million, for example. So that's mostly for the Northwest and Limpopo. Admin expenditures, that's your normal admin expenditures, such as our rentals and all other costs, and the personal expenditures, the normal personal expenditures. The next slide will show you the just the makeup or the breakdown of those costs according to the departments or programs, as we call them. Just to quickly run through that, we've got 8.9 million in the CEO's office, cost services about 24.9 million. Growth and contractor development, which is where the CCCs are, is 21.1 million. Construction industry performance, 9.3 million. Procurement and delivery, 10.6. And registers at 20.3. And that amounts to the 95.5 million of revenue that we actually are going to be making. And yeah, so follows the other years. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much by giving us this information. But first of all, I wanted to make another acknowledgement that I made a mistake not to welcome you. But hoping that I had an assumption that by allowing us to introduce ourselves, it was a form of welcoming you. But in our midst, Mr. Yuki Booth, it is welcome. But the only problem is Mr. S. Cooks is just some hebrain. Okay. And in our midst, we have Mr. Jacobs, who's also a member of the Select Committee, and Mr. Zulu, who's also a member of the committee, who have just joined us now. By saying that, I'll start to maybe to continue with the questions. You see, from the department side, before I allow members to ask, I'll start first maybe to make one or two. You see,
I think not long ago, the CIDB informed Parliament that they've already established some of these construction contact centers, and they've indicated that the remaining five will be established in other provinces in the 2008 and 2009 financial year, but it's nearly 2009, it's finished now. Because in your input you indicated that they have launched other construction contacts, only left with two provinces in your own report, while you inform us that by the end of this year you'll be launched, all of them will be launched. We are a little rich on that one. Why are not being yet established as finalized? And then, second question, there was a thing which was very touchy during the CFO input, that in a distinct mandate, in your mandate, you spoke about the sustainable growth and empowerment of historically disadvantaged. Correct? Then also, to me, it's a contradiction. In the internal context, you spoke about in specialization, you spoke about knowledge. How do you expect the disadvantaged to have knowledge of 20 years? You spoke about 20 years and above that you're having problems. If you can clarify us on that, because that is exactly what is causing problems, whereby people are not having given opportunities because of their... They don't have a knowledge because they don't have an experience of those 20, 30 years. If you can clarify us on that one. I'd like to trigger only with this two and allow members maybe to have some questions. I'll come later with other questions to add. Members, I'd like to give you opportunity to start to ask questions. Okay, let me start this side from my right side. Honorable Member Mlenzane.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I have got only two questions because the other one you have partly covered. On that slide on the mission, the CEO there spoke of strategically and deliberately promoting the empowerment of SMEs to improve their capability and grow the economy. Now, I'm looking at what is practically happening on our government, where you have what is called joint venturing, vis-a-vis fronting. Where these small and emerging contractors would work or operate as a front, whilst so-called they have got joint ventures, where ultimately they end up knowing nothing at the end of the day, no experience. Then the second one is... It also links with that you are raising, the construction sector on the other side, as mentioned here, which is responsible for training and development of contractors. And you don't get a sense which says, where does now the JDB sector, in terms of monitoring that, such that at the end of the day, these emerging contractors that ultimately developed to ultimately go. Look at that template where it's... I will make an example from my province, for instance, the grading, the province. It tells you, yes, that's why. It tells you that the bulk of our own people, the emerging contractors, are, lumped at... set grade, and you will have four grade 9, 6, grade 8. You know, 38 as you go down. So what it means then is that in the 15 years of our democracy and freedom, our own people still remain in that down position of grade 1. Thanks, Chabana.
This way, Mazambane, Mr. Leaf. Oh, sorry, at the back first. Mr. Bush.
Chairperson, yeah. Do not let my surname confuse you. I see the confusion with you. Chairperson, the questions I have is around grading. If you look at that grading, that the ninth fall, all is in Gauteng. Or the most of them, and it brings that the community that the previous speaker spoke about is lacking behind. And I think the thing is, there is communication. People only find out about this department when they start doing jobs and things like that. So I would like to see more communication down there, radio stations, newspapers, communication, public participation in the field there. And as far as grading is concerned, I think in Gauteng we will ask the department to come and give us an explanation of those grading. How does it work? Because down there on the ground, the construction people have a problem with that. And as far as the stakeholder forums is concerned, as I said, the communication thereof must be a bit broader. Thank you, Chairperson, for now.
Thank you. Let's go to Mazambane, Mr. Lito.
Chairman, thank you. Chairman, it's quite a difficult one for me to deal with because I've dealt with the CIDB, my clients, since its inception, and it's been an unpleasant experience from start to finish. And we really see it as yet another bureaucracy and regulation and in the end, destroy competition and expertise. But nevertheless, it does exist, and we're forced to work with it. And the thing that really concerns us is that the emphasis has been, as the President has said, on registration, and that led to huge inhibited development of small contractors who've been unable to get work from the State Departments because the State Departments refuse to give them work unless they're registered. They can't get registered because they don't have the necessary experience. And so you'll have an example, for instance, of an illiterate client of mine, very good with his hands. Any job he really wanted to do was wanting from the Department of Transport was to build the head walls for culverts under district roads. A job he could very, very easily and capably handle, but because he couldn't get registered, he couldn't get the work, and that was the end of him as a contractor. So what is the CIDB, how does the CIDB envisage handling that aspect? Because registrations, as you can see, a huge number of registrations in that first grading. However, there are a lot of people out there who just can't get even that registration. Then the question of the bans themselves, the turnover bans, the upgrading is all very well, but when last do these bans themselves get adjusted for inflation and other things? I can't remember. I have worked with them for years, but I seem to think that the bans don't get updated on a regular basis. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think our main concern has been the question of really very small guys, one-man shows who are just not getting the work from State Departments because they haven't got the right experience and so on. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Member Groenewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the input from the department.
Yes, I think when we look at the paper, everything's always looking nice. We've had a lot of entities who've come with and tell us how good it is in the entities, but when we are looking into the, what is happening on the ground, it is not so easy, and the people are suffering. So one of the big things of the CIDB is to create jobs. You said it this morning, and I want to know, the main thing is sustainable jobs. We've got now this boom in South Africa around about our constructions. The Gold Train is going well. There is a lot of jobs. The stadiums we build in South Africa, there's a lot of jobs. But what after this? What are going to happen to all these people who is at this stage, who've got a job in one of these projects? What will happen to them? Are you creating new jobs for the future in South Africa? Are you busy planning around about this? Or are we going to have more jobless people after this boom we've had now in South Africa? What developments are you planning for the future in South Africa? You said to us this morning you developed the country. You're busy developing the country. So tell us a bit more. How are you going to do that? The registration of contractors. You've had a lot, and the previous speakers also mentioned that 65,000 and 50,000 of them were active, and that you've said in 2008. And I want to know, if we look at the figures now, it is much more. But I'm worried if we are looking into the grading of the provinces again. That is also Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. Something is happening. What about all the other provinces? If you look at the smaller provinces, look at the Northern Cape, 951. I'm worried about that. That is our rural areas, and that is where the people of South Africa is suffering, is in that areas. What input are there from your side in these areas? Because that is where we must create jobs for these people who stay in there. And that is the places where the people is suffering in South Africa. You make mention of bribery. I want to know what measures do you have in place to see that we can reduce these briberies in each and every contract. If you go into it, there's bribery taking place. So you are there to see that it not happens. What are you doing? What systems do you have in place? What people do you have in place to stop this bribery? Because you take food, with bribery, people is taking food out of people's mouths. And we must stop that. I think that is a very, very big problem we've had in our communities with this contract. You make mention of qualities in buildings. And I visit a lot of schools in the past 5 years. And these schools, they are 2 years old and they're falling apart. How are you involved in this type of contract that's taking place all over South Africa? And especially our schools. Some of these schools are dangerous places for our people. And what control do you have on the building of schools and public buildings? Chair, and then I think after I asked the question, maybe I've got a little answer as well in the construction area. After this boom we've had in South Africa, we must look into our roads. Our roads are in a very, very poor condition. So we must train people now at this stage. After 2010, let's look into South Africa's roads. The most of the roads, especially in my province, the Northwest province, the roads are very poor. And I think we must train our people to build new roads. There will be a lot of jobs, and we can create much more jobs in this area. And then I also want to know what is going on at Alice Ross, at the new power station. I hear that there's a lot of contractors who just left the jobs because they are not paid. What is the situation on this? Is it Medupi? I think it's Medupi, the power station. That will be the largest power station in Africa. Mm-hmm. But what is happening there? What is going on there at this stage? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Baba. Umtwana, Uzulu. Okay. Ubaba, Umtwana, Jacob.
Yeah, thanks, Chef. Let me first apologize for arriving late. I've been delayed at the airport. Politicians, they are not late, they've always been delayed. Chair, on this issue of CIDP, I want to be controversial. Most of the criticism that are being leveled against CIDP, it's on the issue of grading. And grading, it goes with money. It means big companies, big jobs, they go, I think, to grade 9. So you find that, I just want to check how many black-owned companies are in grade 9. And how many black-owned companies were involved in construction of stadiums, construction of roads, construction of fence? Because if we don't do that, this wealth, we're not going to redistribute it. It will always be centralized with big companies, and we'll be defeating our own ends. I just need that information, because I'm quite sure. I don't want companies where they are joint ventures, where people are shareholders in Murray and Roberts, in Clinique and so on. I want to have a black company which has built a stadium, which has constructed the road. The other issue that I want to know, how do we develop these contractors? Because there's a lot of registration. How do we develop them? Do we link them with jobs that are there in departments? Or just to register them, from there is no development? And also the other issue is the issue of funding of small contractors. During our provincial week, there were small contractors that who were told that were being developed. But you find that they did not have funds to do that job. So what is the role of CIDP in such companies to develop them, so that they also should go? That's why I say I'm disadvantaged. I just wanted to hear how do they grade these companies, because the real issue is the issue of grading.
Right. I'll start with Mama. I'll start front and go to back.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also join those who have thanked the entity for the presentation, but also to comment to say, for example, if I take this document and go to my constituency, you know, to brief my constituency on this information, in some of the slides, it's actually going to be very difficult for me to say on slide, for example, even this slide that is here, say grading by province. On the paper, it doesn't have that grading by the province. I had to write it by hand. Most of the slides, I'm not sure whether it's on, like even in key focus, you know, you decorated the paper, but you forgot to right the topic. So also on the grading that is here on the slide, if maybe you can clarify us on what are the challenges actually that that the provinces are having, or let's say the contractors are having, in reaching the great nine? Because, for example, in Mpumalanga, Northwest, in Northern Cape, they don't qualify for grade nine. What are the challenges, and what have you done to make sure that you assist those provinces to make sure that they also reach the level nine? And also, if we can get the breakdown, I know it's going to be difficult now. I always sing this song in our meetings to say, maybe if you can break, give us a breakdown of women in each province in this construction, and breaking also down to say in Mpumalanga, so many women are in grade five, so many men are in grade four. If we can get that breakdown, even if it's not today, Chairperson, because I think there's a lot of information or a lot of work. But if you've got it, can we have it? And also awareness programs in all provinces. Awareness programs. What awareness programs do you do in provinces so that people are aware that there is the CIBD instead of individuals? Do you really go down to the rural areas? Do you go down to Emangweni? How do you get information there? And the offices that you've got in provinces, if we can get the details of each province. And the contact, we are not only in Cape Town, Tokona, Long, and what. We can go there during our spare time here, but we represent constituencies, other provinces. We would like to have that that information also. The black-owned enterprises that constitute 84% of all upgrades, also representing provinces, it would be helpful for us to get the breakdown on that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, ma'am. I think the issue for the question of grading is coming back. Grading is coming back. All right, fine. It's, we start wasting any time, Mama.
In most cases, politicians will always say they are covered by the previous speakers.
Honorable Leo Tau.
No, thanks, Chair. I'm not going to say I'm covered. But probably just to make the point, because honestly speaking, this is a challenge for us as an organization, as an institution. We know of obviously the approach of government in dealing with issues of unemployment, the level of poverty and so forth. Government has committed itself to pump in a lot of resources into infrastructure development as an instrument of job creation and fighting poverty. So therefore, this particular area of work becomes quite important for us as members of parliament to really be appraised with what is it that institutions that have been created to have an eye on this particular sector of infrastructure development. What are the instruments that have been put in place to ensure that the response or the level of engagement actually is informed of that particular objective of fighting unemployment and poverty. So the role of CIDP becomes quite important, and particularly with regard to this thing of of the grading. We have seen many problems being raised by your emerging companies and so forth. Are people saying that, but we cannot share in the growth, we cannot share this cake. The gap is getting wider and wider. And as the Africans in particular, and blacks in general, consistently become marginalized in participating in this infrastructure cake. And here is a very strategic institution or instrument that should be assisting us. So therefore, don't be surprised when this thing of grading keeps on coming up, because it's quite important. Because one of the things that we don't know what is happening is the extent to which our emerging contractors are being protected against these, let me not say unscrupulous, because of course they are well established, they are doing business in good, of course their objective is to make money, they are registered and all the sorts of things, but they take advantage of our own emerging contractors, form JVs with them, use them as this particular phase. Once they've got the money, some of them don't even complete these jobs, and they destroy these partners. But I couldn't get a sense to say, how are these emerging contractors being protected against this ill practice of some of the, or behavior of some of these JVs established, especially by big companies who would really not go out there in the best interest of transfer of skills, knowledge, and all those sort of things. The other thing, of course, Mam Temba raises it, the sectoral bias in terms of your registration of contractors. Not only women are affected here. We've got young people also, which we are not getting a sense of them being registered as emerging contractors or as contractors who are actively participating. We don't have that information. It would be good as well that we get that kind of information. One of the a particular bias, or in terms of the sectors that government has committed itself to, is the capacity, or to build the capacity of disabled people to also participate, not to go and climb on top of these castles and be builders and so forth and so forth. I'm not talking about that, where you find somebody who does not have a hand and you expect that person to be on top of the scaffold. But in terms of knowledge of the industry and how the industry operates and be able to participate in the industry, I couldn't get a sense of the extent to which we are being the assistance that has been provided. The other one, Chair, it's not that we don't know. It is happening in some provinces where you find jobs have been allocated to people who are not registered. They are not registered with the CIDB. Maybe it's an oversight on the part of how compliance, regulations, and law enforcement does the CIDB execute that particular role. It would have been very interesting to know. Or if a department, for instance, gives a job to an unregistered person, what then happens? What is the penalty to that? And if there are those experiences, let them be shared with us, where certain steps were taken against people who went against the regulations as stipulated by the Act, and still continue to do this kind of thing. And a very interesting thing, the CEO and the chairperson, in a very broad sense, speaks about the strategic partnership with some institutions, and in this instance, CIPRO. CIPRO, as part of assisting emerging businesses through registration and so forth, they have went into partnership with the Postbank
to open up offices in all provinces to ease this burden of registering companies with CIPO. Now, what becomes the relationship of your offices with the offices of CIPO at the level of that post bank? Or is it a separate provincial office, a separate national office? I don't know if one can just get a sense of how you intend assisting the emerging businesses and so forth. Thanks.
Okay.
Before I allow you to respond on touch 203, yes, my witch. You know, I'm a little bit concerned. In the old report, you spoke about the risk and fraud. You said new risk committee appointed. It's only now. For an example, we had the challenge in Mpumalanga where the bridge collapsed. Is it because you do have your structures in place or you don't have your structures to monitor some things? I don't know. Maybe you can explain. And again, following that, there was an assertion by CDIB's performance program manager, Dr. Rodney Milford, that the construction sector's health and safety numbers have not been improving. From our own department. And again, my concern, in your strategic objectives on organizational capacitation, you spoke about slowly delivering, and then also you spoke about staff turnover, which is very negative. Why? If you maybe can explain and elaborate about that one. Lastly, before I give it to Mama, and I would be happy if Mr. Feldman can contribute something. I don't want him to keep quiet today. You, in terms of information technology, IT, you said 7 being launched. My worry and our worry is one. Most of the time, if you speak about technology, you speak about things which are captured right in the established sectors, which is cities. You don't take it to the rural areas where you're supposed to take them, where a lot of things are taking place, like the stadiums are all over. And not in Johannesburg or Pretoria or whatever, are all over, even the rural areas. But maybe if you can explain. Because why? It's because your key focus, one of your key focus for 2009 and 2010 is done on the municipalities. So how do you work with the remote control without building the ITs there where they're supposed to be? Maybe if you can maybe clarify us, then I'll give it to Mama. Mama, I saw you please. Mr. Feldman, you're coming. Okay, fine. Mama and Mr. Feldman, then we'll give you an opportunity to respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me say, Honorable Tau, I'll add also to the youth, it's women, youth, and people with disability that we didn't. I've got it written down, but I forgot to mention it. And your board, if maybe we can get the understanding of how many women in your board and how many men, and your relationship with Sawika. I remember when we had an event in my province of handing over houses. So we said to the minister, Minister, we are requesting 1,956 houses, not only 2-3. So I think the disadvantage that our people are having is because they are not being given the job to perform. That's why they are being graded at a low rate. But if we can get not Sawik and other organizations, your relationship that you have and how do you assist And you also mentioned that you attend MINMEC where they recommended things that must be improved. If we can get to know what were those things, what were the challenges that you actually had to look into to improve, and have you done that after the recommendations? Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, but before I give it to, let me give it to Mr. Salman Alfa.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to be quiet sometimes, then you can hear the other members like Member Tao. It was a long time I wasn't here. I knew we'll cover something. Mr. Chair, allow me to ask the guest in connection with the research and development agenda. And I would like to mention while they say they also will work with the municipalities. That development and research, he also mentioned the material, the quality of the materials. Did he make a summary or went into the problem of the RDPs and the rental stock, the houses that is poorly built? Is there any documentation where they were involved in the recommendation to actually give back to Department of Public Works, because they are working with Public Works? Secondly, the grading. I mean, you can't grade a grade 9 with grade 1. Do they have any criteria that say you fall in that grade and then you qualify to that grade? It's part of training, as they say, they develop the skills of the contractors and assist them. If they can be grading for, say, you break it up in 3 categories, and not to ensure the small man will get a job, but to build him up to the next stage. And another thing is, must look deeply in subcontracting for people. The last thing I would love to have the breakdown of the black owned. You know, black owned. There are 3 categories we define it. You get African, colored, and Indian. Can I have a breakdown of the percentage by class, please? I appreciate it.
Thank you. Lastly, don't interpret it negatively. Even a delegation, as you are sitting here, it tells us a lot. And we are very serious about it. To all delegations which are coming here in terms of the issue of the gender, we take it very seriously that you must improve it as well. And lastly, the issue of gradings, as you know, fish it off the other side. Thank you, sir. Some people, when they thought about the construction, whatever, they think about that the tax shop must be given to black people only. You can go in building power stations. In terms of grading, people strictly prohibit it. They can't get that grade. To be authorized to build a power station, you can't find it. Even bridges and stadium, etc. I'm very much happy when the members raise that thing, and we take it very seriously. Because it doesn't mean that people, they don't have, I don't think that people show that they don't have capacity. It's because the mentality is that people always must contract. And then the issue of price, you reported about the issue of highly priced and what. What do you do? Because I've already mentioned the issue of risk management. If you don't have that particular section, that means that you'll be having a lot of challenges. I'd like to give an opportunity to respond. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Chair, I know that it's quite a long list of questions. We'll actually try and respond. I think as we respond, almost question by question, others may actually be answered in the process. I know that it's the first time that we interact with the honorable members, and perhaps I need to just make a few remarks that may actually answer some of the questions. The CIDP is an entity of Public Works. There is also the Department of Human Settlements
former Department of Housing. That department has the NHBRC as its entity, equivalent to CIDP. Mm. That body takes care of anything that's got to do with housing. Mm. So home building is excluded from CIDP regulation. We regulate the construction industry in terms of the public sector only. In other words, those people that would like to get involved in the government tendering system, tendering for, to build clinics, schools, roads, dams, all those kinds of things, but excluding home building. People who do mainly labor only, works, in other words, they provide labor only, they don't have to register. Those that do private sector jobs, they don't have to register. Joint ventures, if they are constituted for a project, they would not get registered. But what CIDP does is it has a calculator, what is called a JV calculator. In other words, those people that participate in a particular joint venture, I'm not talking about long-term joint ventures, I'm talking about a joint venture for a particular project. As long as those people that participate in the JV are registered with the CIDP, we use that JV calculator to give them an advantage so they don't have to spend a lot of money registering the JV and perhaps leading to problems. So I just wanted to highlight that. And the stats of the CIDP, I actually put this one up because I showed only about three slides with numbers. This one is a bit old, it comes from May, but I just wanted to demonstrate that you can actually go onto our website and structure the report that you want. If you want women-owned construction companies, it will actually show you. So I'm just using this one to illustrate. Same as before, but the numbers were less. Actual number of companies we've covered, something similar to this, black owned by gray only. And when we say black owned, we actually don't differentiate between Indian colored, et cetera, et cetera. To actually do that would mean going in again, asking people to tell us if they are Indian or colored. But when we look at people or HDI ownership, that's what we capture. On the form, it allows you also to register with what we call a potentially emerging status. In other words, companies that are owned by HDI, they could actually say, I would like to be considered by government and CIDP as a potentially emerging contractor. What that means is it's an equivalent of a BEE tool. In other words, if a client says, would like to build a stadium, one contractor with a grade 9, and then they may say, a contractor with a grade 8 in civil engineering, and a PE status can actually tender for a grade 9 project. It's a development tool that government can use, but it has conditions because government can appoint a contractor at grade 8 for a project that is meant for a grade 9 and kill that contractor because the gap between a grade 8 and a grade 9 can be very big. So the client must provide support to the contractor. So that's the condition for using people with the PE status. But the people with the PE status are not forced to apply for the PE status. They actually, it's a choice. They must say we want to or we don't want to. I thought I should just explain that before I start responding to the questions so that they can make sense. Perhaps responding to the questions that were raised by the chair on the triple C, the very first question. The triple C's are the provincial offices. Instead of CIDP establishing these offices by itself, we decided that we must establish a partnership with the provincial Department of Public Works, assisted by the National Department of Public Works. So we went to the Department of Public Works and said, we'd like to establish provincial offices. But the budget of the CIDP, which in those days was about 60 million rand, was not adequate to roll out these provincial offices. So we negotiated with National Department to assist us in this, to get the provincial department to help. So there is a partnership between the provincial department of public works, even if it has transport and roads in, but the public work component, to work with us and provide the premises. You'll find that, for instance, within their office, they'll give us a portion of their block for CIDP's use. So the CIDP doesn't have to pay rent, because we don't have the enough money to actually do that around the country. So the provincial department will provide the office, CRFD will provide staff, the training, the IT infrastructure so that we can use video conferencing. We have a training room there. It's a fully fledged facility. In fact, if you go to this one in Cape Town, we have them around the country. Those that close to Bishop office, we have it there. In KwaZulu-Natal, we have it in Devon. This is only one office per province provided by the Department of Public Works, and CRAP provides staff and training. So we are responsible for the operation of the office, and the department is responsible for the premises. Now, if in a particular province an extra office is required, the provincial department, as per our arrangement, the provincial department will actually use its offices and its staff, and CRAP will train their staff so that they can then assist in terms of this kind of development. So the provincial office where we have agreed between the two of us will be the one that will control quality from the whole province. So it becomes the responsibility of the provincial department to establish other offices at this stage when the budget of the CIDP cannot actually do it. So that's one statement that I felt we should make. Now, we did promise that we would actually establish a number of offices in the financial year 2008-2009. But we must remember that it was our ambition to have these offices. The procurement that is done for the contractors is not done by CIDP. We provide the services of the architect to make sure that these offices end up being uniform somehow, and that all the requirements in the office are actually done. But it's actually the provincial department that uses its own procurement system to acquire the contractors. Why am I mentioning this? When we say, we negotiate with them and they say, look, by such and such a time, we believe that we should have this office up and running. We add up all the offices. And then there are issues that come up, for instance, purely procurement related, where the CRAP does not get involved. The department must advertise that we need a contractor at this level to actually build or renovate the office that will be used for the CRAP. Something may actually come up that delays that procurement system, and CRAP will have to make an adjustment on this target. Take Limpopo office, for instance. It was expected that Limpopo office would start operating before the end of last year. But the department had actually commissioned a developer to build a huge office block for the department. And the CRAP was going to be accommodated there. Now we don't have control over that block because, I mean, it's a multi-million rand project. It's a landlord that will actually rent it out to the department. It's their own arrangement. We don't get involved. They were doing their own thing and asked to have a small piece of it. The office has not been launched to date. Again, not because of CRAP, but because the department's own processes had to be followed. Northwest, we thought we would actually launch by early this year. There's a serious procurement issue which has resulted in a delay. I'm not sure if they will even be able to complete the office during this year. So we're doing it in partnership, but they actually run that project because they must give us the premises. We cannot dictate to them. They use their systems to procure for construction systems. So perhaps it's very important to understand it from that angle. So all the time they update us, now we have a problem here. We think it's going to take another 2 months before we can launch. And then we make adjustments on our system. But we always have a budget ready to do what we are supposed to do. IT infrastructure, the CFO will tell you, we've budgeted for the last two also in this financial year. Because when they say we are ready, we must move in and begin to install IT infrastructure. Limpopo, for instance, were delayed, or they were delayed because they applied late for the license for the telecom line. We started negotiating with the department saying, guys, you need to speed up this. We understand that now the telecom line has been installed. There's now the UPS that the department must actually buy. But on the part of CRAP, we've provided furniture in that office. We just could not move in there because people would move in there and not have a telecom line. Therefore, there would be no access to head office. Because the way these offices work is wherever they are linked to our office, to head office. So that anything that they need, the information that I have access to here, all the provincial offices have access to that information. But if you don't have a telecom line, you want to have a problem because people will just sit and not do it. So we decided not to move into the new block, even if the staff of the department moved in there, because they had no telephone line. Now that the telephone lines have been installed, I'm told, and once the UPS is in, we are ready. IT infrastructure is actually being installed as we speak. So it's not because of us that this will not happen, but it's because we have to respect the department's procurement system. So I hope that clarity actually helps. We actually started with the pilot way back in, I think, 2007, 2008. And that was the pilot. And we felt that the last ones would be done in 2008, 2009. It's not our money, it's not our procurement system, it is the provincial department, and we just need to work with them. The second one dealt with the internal context, specialization, and perhaps not talking to supporting the historically disadvantaged. I think in terms of that, when you talk about the internal context, the CIDP is a highly specialized organization in terms of most of its problems. Therefore, all the time we need to make sure that we have people that understand what we do. For instance, when we talk about research and development, we cannot use somebody who is not familiar with that environment. Dr. Rodney Milford, that you referred to, Honorable Chesterton, is actually a specialist in the area, and he has been working with CSIR. He was a board member of the CIDP. He actually chose to come and join the CIDP by resigning his position as a board member and resigning from the CSIR. He has a lot of knowledge in terms of all these things that we talk about. So we want to move in terms of his problem, into this specialist area where you have people that can analyze information and inform the industry likewise. But our focus is, I wanted to say also we're a knowledge-based organization. We need to distribute knowledge. The publications that we have, unfortunately we didn't bring them here, and I'll actually make an effort to actually send publications that we produce, reports on the construction industry indicators which show you what is happening. Information that tells you, for instance, the point that has been raised here, who actually gets the big project in terms of value per project, who gets many projects but smaller values. It actually has graphs that indicate that. So it's just that we're not aware that we'd actually need that kind of information, but we'll actually send it to you. But there is also an area called construction register service. That's where contractors register, as well as the provincial offices, where the information is specialized in another way. It's the registration of contractors, it's the documents that must come through. It's not as specialized as construction industry improvement, for example, or performance. We don't need specialists there, we need people that can be trained. So it's different levels. So when I say internal context within the CIDP, we need to have to groom our own people to be specialists as opposed to using consultants to do basic work that is the backbone of the CIDP. So there is actually no conflict, but it is actually the fact that we must actually work with the historically disadvantaged to support them, and our programs are actually pro the historically disadvantaged. But in terms of our own people inside the internal context, we want to beef up capacity so that they can then lead and provide strategic leadership. From Honorable Mlenzan, he had two questions. And he referred to our mission, for instance, that we are focused on SMMEs. If you look at the whole industry, a grade 9 contractor does not need a lot of our support because they have capacity to do this thing. So a lot of our support would actually go towards SMMEs. We have developed the National Contractor Development Program to assist, it's a framework to assist specifically SMMEs. It was developed between 2006 when we started and through 2007. The intention was to make sure that we show contractors how to actually grow. But it's very important to understand that CIDP cannot do development as such. We create a framework. Because to do development, you do it on the job, you do it on the project. We don't award contracts, so we can't do development that way. But together with the National Department of Public Works, we develop this framework, which CIDP has rolled out to specific departments so that the departments can develop and even guide them on how to do it, how to develop their own client contractor development program. In other words, when they appoint contractors, they must say, we have this contractor development program, like I can give the example of KZN, Department of Roads, Google Market program, where they incubate the contractors until they get to certain grades. They must have exit strategies for each band of grades, and they do it. It's not CIDP that does it, but together with the department, we've provided the framework, which has national statistics which are indicative only. and they must say out of these numbers, we'll only be able to do these numbers in terms of development. What we found is that it's taking too long for the clients to actually come up with their own development problems, but those must actually be developed, they must be on paper, they must share that with the contractor. The development framework must be shared with the client. We can't go to contractors and say, this is what we said to the client, it would actually create a problem. It's the client that must say, we are going to give you projects from grade 2 to grade 4, this is how we're going to do it, and then this is the exit strategy. From grade 5 to grade 6, this is how we're going to do it, this is the exit strategy. So that they then make impact. Otherwise, PRDP cannot actually develop contractors because we don't have construction projects where we can develop them. I just felt maybe that is important. We develop a framework, a development framework, and then the others, depending on their capacity, can then come in and do their work. Yes, we have issues related to JV and funding. Funding is a very serious issue. JVs are supported by the CIDB. Funding is not, because it's corruption. It is corruption of a sophisticated kind. We actually rely on contractors themselves to tell us or tell the client first that the contractor that you appointed to do this project is not actually the one that is busy with construction. It's another contractor. They must report to the client, and the client must actually take action, because it means the contractor that had tendered for the project has actually sold it to somebody else. He doesn't even have to come to the CIDB. When it does come to the CIDB, we would investigate, work with the client to make sure that this stops. But it's very sophisticated. We don't go out to projects to check who is doing the project, etc., etc. We actually don't have that capacity. But the client has the responsibility through its consultants, through its own staff, to make sure that the people that are busy with construction projects are actually the ones that they actually appointed themselves. The JVs need to operate differently. The JVs need to work in such a way that it's a business imperative. The contractor must actually be aware of what they're doing, because they will actually sign a contract between themselves. And nobody else knows. It's actually the CEO of this small company signing with the CEO of a big company. We have various forms of contracts that the CIDB promotes, but between the client and the contractor. Now, if the contractors on their own are forming a joint venture, they sign a contract which is a legal matter between them. That doesn't involve the client necessarily, unless the client says, I'm responsible for this project. If you told me that you had a contract and that contract is not working, we can actually remove you from the project and give it to somebody else. CIDB does not have insight into that kind of relationship. So there are issues, we are told. We listen to emerging contractors, they tell us what happened. Also the established contractors tell us something else. And what we advise the contractors to do is better to actually have their own lawyer to explain to them what the implications are of the contract. Because sometimes they just sign because they're excited there's a project. But when they get in, they actually find that there is actually no meat in the project. So it's something that happens, but it's a contractual relationship that must be ruled on by the court. Anybody else who is not party to that contract cannot actually get involved. So what I think should be done by industry and through the advice of the CIDB getting involved is that people must understand I don't want to say contractual law in its broadest sense, but contractual law as it applies to the project where they get involved in. Because once a contractor is signed, without anybody knowing, it should be very difficult to actually go and reverse that, because the terms of the contract are supposed to be interpreted by the courts of law. So there's that element. But when they sign a contract with the department and there's an issue, yes, the two parties are the department and the contractor, but where they flout the CIDB regulation, then we get involved. But when, again, it's a purely contractual matter between the client and the contractor, it must actually be handled through the court by the two and the contractual arrangement. We have a specific mandate as the CIDB, and as I said, we're not mandated to do training. We're not mandated to do development directly, but to actually lead strategically and create development frameworks. The construction sector is responsible for accrediting courses and accrediting service providers. When we saw that there was a gap between the CIDB and the CETA, we decided to negotiate with them. We've now signed an MOU because we believe that they can't work on their own. We can't work on our own. And remember that the two actually report to different ministries, and it was actually becoming a headache. We report to the Ministry of Public Works, and they used to report to the Ministry of Labor, and now it's going to be the Department of Higher Education. So it does create institutional problems where when we attend HOD's meetings, for instance, and MINMEX, they cannot be there because they will attend there with Labor. So it creates these bottlenecks. So what we find, and we compare it with other countries, where, for instance, in Singapore, the training academy is within an equivalent of the CREP. In South Africa, the mandate of training is sitting with the CETA. So once we start doing training, it's going to be conflict. And the CETA was actually beginning to complain about that, and we discussed it, and it's been clarified. So as we go forward, we highlight the area of training, but we must understand who has the mandate as per their act to actually do that. That is why, for instance, with the NHBRC as well, we don't want to start going into housing and begin to regulate that industry because we don't have a mandate to do it. They have it. That is the NHBRC. I just felt maybe we need to talk about that. The grades in the provinces. So that I wanted to pull out other slides here because I think my battery is actually, or your charger. Perhaps what we need to do first is to just talk a little bit about the grade. How do we grade contractors and why? Let me explain the criteria first. Okay, this is the one I wanted to go to, the one that we were busy with. Let me explain the criteria. The criteria that is used by the CIDP is based on only two capabilities, and not capacity, but capability. In other words, can the contractor do it? It's a financial capability, and we don't even need the contractor's own money. If the contractor can demonstrate to us that they can have access to finance to kickstart the project, because without that, they can't do it until they can invoice later on. So it's financial capability. The second one is work capability. In other words, somebody who has experience in terms of civil engineering will actually, or competence in that field, will actually be registered in civil engineering, except for grade one. Grade one is entrance level, we're not too strict, sometimes even to the point where we believe we should have done that. So it's work capability. If the contractor is only a builder, he or she will register in general building. If they are qualified or have competence in civil engineering, they will be registered in civil engineering. If they have competence in mechanical engineering, they will register there. Because you don't want somebody who is not qualified in electrical engineering and they say they want to be electrical engineers, next thing you have a building in fire because they did not actually understand the standards. So these are the reasons why they're actually supposed to do what they can do. Now I'm saying we use only capabilities. A contractor is then expected, for instance, to do one project. And if they can deliver that project, that is fine. But it does not look into capacity, which means a contractor is marketing themselves very well, they can begin to do five projects at the same time. If the client who must say, you have a grade five here from the CIDP, how many projects are you doing? Because you can give one project to a contractor. The contractor does it well, and you're excited as a client, you say, we'll give you another project. Problem begins when you start giving that contractor two or three projects at the same time. The contractor, who is relatively small, cannot manage all these projects at the same time. He can manage one at a time, and he has the capability to do that. But when you give 10 projects, one is in Limpopo, one is in Cape Town, the owner-manager must fly around the country, and the workers, as soon as they leave, they start dropping the standards, they slow down, and it will affect service delivery, which ultimately will affect government. So the client must check in terms of capacity. It's part of risk management. In fact, our standard for uniformity advises the client before they actually appoint that they have a shortlist, they start talking to the contractor. Mr. Contractor or Mrs. Contractor or Ms. Contractor, you actually on the shortlist. How many projects are you doing? And the contractor must declare, must not lie. And what happens is we have very good contractors or black-owned construction companies that are good, but they can't say, we don't have capacity anymore, you give us the next project, we can't do it, please give it to somebody else. They want these projects, and they end up selling them. That's how fronting is then promoted. And you never know that they actually sold it to another contractor until a contractor who missed out on the project comes and tells you that that project is not actually being done by this contractor. They actually sold it to somebody else. And again, it's a complicated thing because they might say, look, he's a subcontractor. I didn't sell the project. And again, it becomes complicated. You would spend years trying to investigate one project and actually stop the project from proceeding. But there is a lot of interesting information. We work with the clients. Clients are actually picking up where planting is taking place, and we work together to do that. We, by the way, have a forensic unit within the CIDP that does this investigation. Some clients also have their own forensic unit, and we actually work together once we know that they have that. And I believe in that way we actually clamp down on planting. I'll tell you two interesting stories coming from a particular province, where the forensic unit from there came to ours and said, we've got a principal that won a tender to renovate his own school. Now, that's not acceptable. And then they also said there's a traffic cop who is winning construction tenders, and it's interesting what reasons were given why this traffic cop is actually getting projects, because he issued traffic fines. And if he gets this contract, then he will actually turn a blind eye on this. And a traffic fine is very small to me compared to millions of rand that government is actually spending. So these are the things that we actually pick up. And we pick that up through working with the forensic unit from the client side. But the grading, CIDP gives a license to trade. And we give a license to trade to everybody that applies to us. We don't have a license to trade for black people or for women or for, you know, we give a license to all the contractors, but then it's based on the registration criteria. We can't say because this is a white owned company, we're not going to give them a license. I think it's very important to understand it at that level, because we give a license to trade and this person can then go and tender. It's actually on the other side where the available instrument can be used to actually leverage and support emerging contractors. For instance, the PE status, what we're finding is that it needs to be used more and more. I was a consultant for the CIDP in rolling out these between July 2005 and June 2006. I went around the country. We're telling contractors and we're telling clients exactly the same story. It's amazing that I'm now with the CIDP, this is 2009, you can go to clients and find that the people who are within the supply chain management unit do not understand. We go there again, we capacitate them, we train them. After 3 months, after 6 months, the staff members leave, and you must go and train them again, and it's becoming a very serious issue. We felt that what we need to do now is to negotiate with the universities, that the universities must actually train people who are going to a university so that the lack of capacity within the CIDP can be catered for through universities, because clients in most cases will appoint consultants to help them. If the consultant understands how to apply the CIDP requirements, then there is no problem. Still, the client is responsible. So I think it's important to actually understand this. Now, the steps in the provinces, we're keeping the steps, but we can't go to a particular province and invite everybody come and register as such. People must say, I'm making a choice, I want to be involved in the business of construction. And when they apply, we then must register them within 21 working days. With grade one, like I said, you now do it over the count, same day, 48 hours, within 48 hours they get active on the system. But we register them over the count now. But from grade two to grade nine, we actually take up to 21 working days. It could be 10 days, it could be 15 days, but legislation says up to 21 working days. Now, the numbers reflect, for instance, if you look at Northern Cape. Northern Cape has the smallest number of registered contractors, 951. When we provided an office there, we had to negotiate with the department that it was not feasible for the CIDP to establish an office there. It would be too expensive for us. We negotiated with the department. The department said, look, we'll support you. We'll provide you with an office. We'll even support you with junior staff. And then CIDP provided the CCC manager. It's a smaller office. They don't have projects. Once we give a big office there, it will end up being a white elephant. It can't do much worse because perhaps there's none. But on the launch of the office, we were given commitment by the province that they would actually try and prioritize projects. But we need to understand that there is that issue. Gauteng, sorry, Limpopo was the first one to have PRDP registered contractors. And they were leading the pack because they had that advantage. Gauteng then overtook them. Gauteng overtook them because the head offices of companies is actually based in Gauteng. So it was giving that skewed kind of picture. KwaZulu-Natal, we started with the, in fact, KZN, when we had identified three provinces where we were going to establish the CCC office, KZN came and said, we want to do it, we will spend our own money to drive it. And guess what? It was the first office to be launched because they were so committed to it. You can see also in terms of their numbers, they've overtaken everybody, even Gauteng where head offices are. So it's very dynamic out there. It depends on the support programs by the provinces. I believe that KZN has a very structured support program, contractor development program, and the Vuvuzakhe program has actually been used to support, sorry, to look at how we can improve our registration process. So we work very closely with them. I just explained about Northern Cape before you came in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they are small, they don't have a lot of projects. I'm happy that the issue of the stadia was actually raised. I believe that the stadia would not have been delivered for 2010 if the CIDP did not exist. It is the systems of the CIDP that were used to guide the host cities on how to procure for the stadia. We may feel bad that perhaps there were not black contractors at grade 9 and all the grade 9s were there. If we think about the stadium, building a stadium is very complicated. We had South African companies competing with international companies from elsewhere. And you need to have that expertise. I'm talking about companies that build stadia around the world. They were competing with South African companies. Even if they are grade 9, I think it's mostly South African companies that have been involved. I think what government was supposed to do, and this is where, again, CIDP couldn't do it. The host cities were supposed to say, we will give you this project, provided a certain value is actually subcontracted to the grade cities that are black-owned, the fires that are black-owned. And again, CIDP could not get involved in that. We just provide guidance on how it's supposed to be done. Then we allow the client to be flexible. But sometimes when you start to take into a client, and you say the client must do ABC, and the client doesn't have the capacity, it backfires on them, and they say, but PIDB told us to do it this way. So we allow them. That's why we have a framework, and depending on the capacity of the client, if they can do it, they do it. If they don't have capacity this year, maybe they'll have it next year, then they apply it. So it is that flexible arrangement that I would plead with the members to understand, because if we don't do that, we'll end up forcing everybody to do things in a particular way, and we'll actually stop all the projects because the medium capacity municipalities will not be able to do it. It's only the metro that may be able to do it because they have capacity, they have engineers. I don't know if you're familiar with the report from Alison Lawless that shows the lack of engineers and engineering capacity in the municipality and the project that they are doing to try and support, because a lot of engineers have left the municipality. I'd like to chase this up and look at the other questions. Most grades in Gauteng are in Gauteng, but also we still find that at the lower level, that's where you have most grades. The member actually requested that perhaps there should be more communication to make sure that people understand how the grading system works. We appreciate that. We have gone around the country talking to contractors. We ended up in big halls talking to people who were not contractors. We changed the strategy. It's now easy working through the client. We say, we're coming into your area. Please invite contractors and tell us their grades, their specific problems so that we can deal with them. That has been more positive and yielded better results than when we go into a church hall and speak to people who are not contractors. What seems to happen is that they think you're going to give them jobs, and they come to us. I mean, I had 850 people in Richards Bay, 450 in Peter Maritzburg, about 450 again in Devon. And I can tell you, among those, we hardly had 10% of forms that were returned. So what we're doing now is moving away from just talking to people who are not contractors and they don't understand what is happening, to people that are now registered with us, because we do have capacity now in terms of those that are registered. Those that want to register and they are not registered, we're not cutting them out, but if they tell us that we'd like to know more about the CIDP, we have a specific outreach program that will go to those particular areas. If they don't tell us they need it, it's difficult for us to know where they are, but we prefer working through the client so that the client can actually provide the venue and do the training, because the client may end up using those people that may have been registered through our intervention. The unpleasant experience since the beginning of the CREP, remember that the CREP was established to regulate a previously unregulated industry. Take the industry. You try and regulate it, you're going to have a lot of problems until people begin to understand that, yes, these are the things that you must do. Because you introduce rules, people who had access to projects because they had connections can't do it anymore. They will be told you must be registered with the CREP, you must have this grade for you to do this project. And if you have a P status and you're allowed to tender, they will advise you likewise. We're facing a situation now where after 3 years, starting from 2004 to 2007, 2006 to 2008, and then 2006-2009, people are now applying for reassessment because our Act says within 3 months towards the expiry of your registration, you must apply again to the CREP to be reassessed from scratch. Because you might have a grade, but it's just an empty shell. And this is where funding begins to happen. Because this person will say, I have a grade, kept the contract, he sells it to somebody else, he doesn't have people working for them, and it is a problem. So we've always worked with contractors, and there are challenges of differing levels. At the moment, we're dealing with the issue of this reassessment, and we believe that the more we talk to contractors, the more they'll actually understand. We take this point very seriously, and we've discussed it with other contractors as well, that people who make curves for roads, and they are very small, it's one person with two other people and they have a bucket, do they really have to register? We need to look into that, because at the moment the Act requires that they are either registered unless they are going to subcontract. Now, subcontracting is a very powerful instrument that we believe should be used carefully. We don't need all contractors to register. Those that are subcontracting, the CREP Act says they are excluded unless they also want to be main contractors. If you want to work under the main contractor, you don't have to register. Actually, our register shouldn't be this big. A lot of people who are specialized, a bricklayer for instance, might say, look, I'm specializing in bricklaying. I'll develop my people to help me in bricklaying. They come in at a time when the foundation is there, they just do bricklaying until they get to the roof, they move up. They subcontract under the main contractor. And by the way, we advise contractors about this, but there's this thing about major contractors. They want to say, I started this company from scratch, now it's up there. And it's very dangerous for government to appoint a one-person owner of a business at grade 9. If that owner passes away, which is unfortunate, it means the project stops. Government must go out on tender again. So we actually tell contractors about the different business models that they must use. When they are small, it's mostly looking for projects to put food on the table. But then they begin to be complicated, and they need to have more than one owner. But if one owner dies, the project continues, the company continues, and government does not have to suffer in terms of service delivery. These are all the things that are available as advice to the contractors. But yes, we do note that there are certain contractors who are specializing in very small fields, and they actually do not have to register. But government must actually say all these people will be allowed to subcontract and they don't have to be registered. But government can also support the register of contractors by saying you need to get used to a regulated environment, even those who are subcontracting from such and such a grade must actually be registered with the CIDP so that they can actually begin to understand how it works in a regulated environment. I know there was an issue about the ban. When do they get adjusted? When the CREP was established, we did not want to tamper too much on the tender value rate. For the first time, we started in 2007 actually, the board approved the change that was made on the grade 1, simplifying that process, and then approved the changes to be made on grades 2 to 9, and the minister signed accordingly. For the first time from the 1st of January this year, we had adjusted successfully, and this was signed by the minister, that the tender value ranges, the upper limit, were actually adjusted.
So for the first time they have been adjusted, and they've been adjusted to the value of about 30% to take care of inflation and the fact that material costs were actually unpredictable. So we've made a very big adjustment in terms of the tender value ranges. There are only two grades that we need to work on now. Grade 2 was part of the changes that were made, where we took their grade from, their upper limit from $500,000 to $650,000. We need to now take grade 1 up to $500,000, but you can't have grade 1 at $500,000 and grade 2 at $650,000. We need to then improve grade 2. So that the CRDP is actually working on, and we will actually be submitting that to the board so that it becomes reasonable. Member Kroonewald, you were saying that yes, the system is good on paper, but on the ground it is different. And I think some of the issues that I've raised may actually begin to answer some of the questions. Yes, there's a boom in the construction industry in South Africa. Even with the credit crunch, the South African construction industry has actually performed very well, beating the other sectors. I think we need to work together with stakeholders to make sure that we understand where the people are going to be when these projects are finished. It's not a CRDP responsibility to say those that have been working on the Caltrain is going to be completed say in 2012 or in 2011, therefore these people must go to a particular place. I think it's a responsibility of both government, yes, CRDP is part of that, to look for these opportunities. We believe that before the credit crunch, the stadia were actually about 10% of construction that government was committing itself to. So there will be other projects coming in. It's just that the stadia or 2010 stadia were so conspicuous. People even linked Caltrain to the 2010 stadia, but Caltrain has actually nothing to do with the 2010. There is a phase that coincidentally would be completed at that time, but Caltrain as a project was not meant for 2010. If you remember, the Caltrain project was started before we even got to host the 2010 Soccer World Cup. So I believe that we need to work together. But specifically on the question, are you creating new jobs? CRDP does not create the new jobs. We don't appoint contractors. We don't have projects to appoint on, except where we improve the head office block in Pretoria, where we work with the provincial department for the construction of the CRDP offices. So we don't have CRDP create jobs as such, but we support the registration of contractors who indirectly will then begin to create jobs. What development are we doing? How are we doing it? As I said again, we don't develop directly. We create a development framework. We are now working with the different government departments to actually have their own contractor development programs, because they appoint contractors, therefore they can develop them. So we work with them. The NCDP framework, we can actually send a copy to you, one of the things that we'll send to you. It will show you how, what role the CRDP is going to play, what role is expected from other role players in the industry. Provinces with less numbers, and again, we can't go out and get provinces with lower numbers to have more numbers, because once you have too many and they don't get projects, they lose money because they must maintain their registration with us. So the registration of contractors in a province must match kind of development problem that government has planned for the province. It may be low in other areas, it's just unfortunate. I mean, Northern Cape has less compared to Gauteng. You go to Gauteng, you see tower cranes all over the place because there's a lot of work to be done. But remember, there's also the private sector, the government and the private sector. For government to decide not to have the Gauteng in somewhere in Northern Cape, it's because it might not be viable. But we don't get involved in that. But yes, we would support a situation where you have enough contractors in a province. And by the way, the procurement systems would actually allow the provinces to give preference to contractors who are based in their own province. So in that way, they would actually support their own. Number of women on the board. We have three women on a board with 13, a total of 13 people. So it's 10 males and 3 women. Those women were actually appointed by the minister. In fact, the board is appointed by the minister. They were appointed on the basis of their knowledge for the industry.
would have wished for a bigger number, but that was reality. We don't appoint the board, the minister appoints the board. In terms of the youth, people with disabilities, this is where I wanted to show you this slide. It wasn't part of this one. So the machine is a bit slow. I'm going to show you statistics, because every month we produce these statistics. You can customize the information the way you want. If you want to see black-owned construction companies by grade, you can actually structure it like that. We use this to show the client that if, for instance, the Western Cape Department or section of Public Works under Transport Roads and Public Works, they will actually see that, okay, we can actually assist black-owned contractors in terms of this particular case. You can do it by province as well. If they want to see black-owned percentage by class of work, and again, that information becomes available. And this information is generated on a monthly basis, and those that would like to see it can actually see it on our system. Women owned by grading, and it shows you, for instance, that between grade 1 and grade 3, you may have numbers that are reasonable. But below, or sorry, above that, you begin to see numbers that are dwindling. And again, this can be used as a targeting strategy by the client to say, we'll support women in a structured way in the construction industry. So it's information that is available, and clients must actually use that. Women owned in mechanical engineering, a highly specialized field, you can see the numbers look bad. But we need to also understand that women must actually know this industry at lower grades when they are owner managers. If they are not familiar with this kind of specialization, they will actually not recognize mechanical engineering. So we'll need to appreciate that, while clients must support them. Support them and say to them, look, there are smaller numbers here. Here's an opportunity for women-owned contractors to actually play a role. They will employ mechanical engineers to actually provide the expertise. So there is an opportunity for them. And this information we actually share with stakeholders all the time. And then we have gradings by province, class of works by grading. You can actually look at each province. Eastern Cape, for instance, would have that kind of breakdown. You go to the Free State. So the numbers are actually developed further, and this information, again, is available. I'm not going to go through all of that. I just want to illustrate that black-owned, you can have. Women-owned, you can have, even in different classes. Youth-owned, we also have. It's just not captured here. You can have youth-owned. People with disabilities, at this stage, the form does not indicate that people with disabilities would actually register in any particular way. They could be black, for instance, so people with disabilities would actually come out under black people. They could be women, and they would be captured under them. So what we need to do is to, we have started interacting with the Deputy Minister of Public Works, who is very keen to actually elevate the issue of people with disabilities, that our software must begin to actually cater for that. But those that are already registered, it means we must go back, and it's going to take quite some time to see the people with disabilities, because when it comes to preferences, clients may actually want to do that. The information is submitted by contractors when they tender, and they want to actually indicate that they have people with disabilities. I just wanted to show this slide to illustrate that point. SAWIT, we have a very strong relationship with SAWIT. We actually supported their development. I mean, last year we assisted with contact one of their delegates who went to the US, and it was our contribution. We have them as part of the stakeholder forum membership, and we have a very close relationship with them. We had presented to MINMEC and the HODs. I think what I didn't understand was, in terms of the recommendation on the basis of what I had said, I think that was the question. Whenever we develop something new, or take something that's been in existence, an instrument that has been in existence, and we want to modify it, we present it to the board and present it to the HOD's forum, present it to MINMEC, because HODs and MINMEC are our stakeholders. Before it's taken further, for instance, the board may then approve, and then it goes to the minister. The minister will then publish it for public comment, and after that, it may then be gazetted after we've analyzed the responses. So when we go to the HODs and we go to MINMEC, these things are done. The five-year review recommendations, where I was talking about these recommendations, we had a report that was issued. CIDP handed it over to the ministry. and we're implementing those recommendations. If it's got to do with those recommendations, I was just not sure which one in terms of MINMEC and HOCs, and perhaps which one in terms of the five-year review recommendations. So when we talk to MINMEC, there would be advice in terms of, oh, can you consider this? Can you consider that? HOCs may also do that. But the HOCs meeting is always a precursor to MINMEC, so that when going to attend MINMEC, the HOCs become the testing ground for issues that would be submitted by all entities of the department. In terms of research and development, I believe that the point I raised about the improvement in the construction industry using innovative materials would actually come from research and development. But these research and development, CRED can't do, it doesn't have capacity. We rely on research institutions and work very closely with them. But we believe that research has not been supported very well in South Africa. When the construction industry was not in a boom and there was a decline, a lot of companies that even had in-house research began to pull out because they didn't have money to support it. But we see quite a number of them beginning to focus only in their areas. What CRED wants to do then is to work with these research institutions, especially the academic institutions, to make sure that the students and our criteria will actually support black students and women. Black students in South Africa, as you know, education system may not be supported that very well in terms of math and science. We need to make sure that black students in particular stay at universities, that they attain post-graduate studies, they get used to research, because nobody is going to be able to customize research output to our own environment. If you get somebody from Europe, they may not understand the imperatives that we're trying to drive within South Africa. If I make an example, we may have the Ronneveld in the rural areas. That thatch actually gives comfort when it's hot outside, that inside it would be cool. When it's cold outside, you'll find that it's just smiles inside. We need to incorporate into our research that kind of traditional structure so that research becomes relevant. So we want to support that, but we don't have a center for research as such. The CIP that is led by Dr. Rodney Milford works with quite a number of bodies, academic institutions. We drive what we call the postgraduate conference, which we hold on an annual basis. We may have skipped a few years when we're testing, which way we're supposed to go. It is supported basically annually, and it's in the direction of supporting research and development. We allow students to write papers, present them, and CRED actually gives them awards for good papers, because that's the direction that we think we must take. Municipalities and the quality of materials. Municipalities are suffering. They have a big problem. Sorry, I'm the one that's talking for too long because I'm giving these responses. I think at some stage I'll allow the chairperson to take over. But can I just complete a few of these? We need to focus on municipalities because that's where service delivery must happen. Remember that when you build infrastructure, it's not just infrastructure, but it's a point of service delivery. It could be a clinic, it could be a school, and therefore we must fast track those. We believe that we need to use innovative materials. Therefore, municipalities must get involved with us. They must work with the Agrimo Board. I think the Agrimo Board may have presented to you already. They come up with innovative materials. The turnaround time, if it takes, say, 2 weeks to build a pool, it could actually take 1 week, if I'm exaggerating, to erect prefabricated structures in a rural area. They are also flexible because if you don't need an extra classroom anymore, you move it to the area that needs development. So municipalities would need to be involved in that. The quality of materials is a serious concern. CRED does not have a register for the register of materials of manufacturers and suppliers at this stage. It's something that we'll actually do later on. We are not actually forced to do it. We'll do it when we see that the environment requires that. So we need to work very closely together to make sure that the quality of materials is the quality that will actually last. Because when you build something, you don't build it for 2 months. You build it for a number of years. Roads are built for 50, 80 years. So we need to be abreast with technology when it comes to that. Rental stock, I think, again, it becomes the decision of the department. If they feel rental stock is the way to go, then I think that that should be done. We don't get involved in home building, so RDP houses we would not comment on, except for plumbing and things like that, where the contractors should actually be registered with the CRDP. Treating grades 1 to 9 together, they are in this register, in our register, because they must get used to the regulated environment. But we treat them differently. For instance, as I indicated, they register over the counter. There's not a lot of criteria that are required for grade 1, but from grade 2 to 9, the criteria become stricter, 2, 3, 4, not as strict as from 5 going up to 9. So we treat them relevant to their level. For instance, the requirements are a bit more relaxed at lower level, while from 5 going up, we become stricter. From 6, we begin to have professionals, only two areas. From 7, then we begin to emphasize the issue of the requirement of professionals. So we actually do treat them differently, although they are within the same register. Other people have asked us not to actually register grade 1, but we believe that they are getting used to the environment. They will have less problems with them going forward when they become grade 2, 3, etc. May I allow the chairperson to respond on the others, and I will pick up on whatever is in that later. Just want to drink water and clear my throat. Yes.
Honorable Chair, as you mentioned to us, we take these questions and issues as very constructive, and we appreciate them, because what we are experiencing is that a number of people are not fully familiar with what the CRDB is doing and the extent of our mandate. But let me make a general comment. It's perhaps very easy to say, it's the CETA, construction CETA, that has this particular mandate. It's the Department of Public Works, national and provincial, that has this particular capability. We are sufficient in what we do. It is not our attitude. Our attitude is we recognize we play a facilitating role, and that we must work with these people, and that's what we are trying to do. Unfortunately, people sometimes perceive us when there's a difficulty or a challenge. They say, well, CRDB should have done this. But it's not entirely in our power to unlock the particular issue. You know, take, for instance, the access to work for black firms for work at grade 9. You know, the client also has the power to repackage the work in such a way that companies at lower levels can access that work. In other words, you can have what is known as multiple procurement, where you break up a major project into packages. But what it does require is that the client should have the in-house capacity to manage, because a project that is broken up into small segments need someone to coordinate the interfacing of those segments. So it's either the client must have that capacity to manage the interfacing, or you then need an overarching contractor or management contractor to manage that interfacing. You know, the CRDB cannot dictate to the client ultimately, but we can provide the framework such as the CEO has been talking about. So we recognize and appreciate the questions, but we appreciate the opportunity to explain how we fit into the delivery chain so that people can understand and perhaps bear with us. We know the challenges, and we're trying to work to ensure that whole delivery chain works much smoother than perhaps people perceive them at the moment. So that's really the overarching comment that I wish to make. The question of how many black firms are in grade 9, I think that people see this as perhaps a symbol of the ultimate development that must happen in the country. And the real question now is, how many large projects are going on in the country? You know, we can't have, it depends as the economy grows, everything is possible. But if we, for instance, right now have 92,000, just as the database shows the breakdown, if all 92,000 contractors are in grade 9, I think we would have a horrible crisis on our hands.
because you would have companies that have employed maybe 300 people and they are jobless because there are not many jobs to go around. So there's a dynamism in the economy that also fuels the access of firms to the upper levels. What our register does allow is for companies to perhaps be strategic in their formation and in their targeting of work. So let's say that we have three black firms that are all on grade 7. Or, you know, our website actually shows the combination. And they want to target grade 9 work. They can actually form a strategic partnership. And the grading system would allow them to tender for that grade 9 work. So we have mechanisms within the registration system that allows black firms to access work that is at a higher level than their particular registration category would allow them to. And then, of course, the second level is the clients themselves structuring the work through the preferencing criteria, which is reflected in our standards of uniformity for tendering, through the preferencing criteria to actually encourage black firms and emerging firms to access work. I think we should apologize to Mama Temba about the slides that were printed incorrectly. It's really an unfortunate error. We apologize to you. And can you talk to that?
Yeah, let me just apologize that it came out blank. What we did is we sent the slide electronically to the department, and then they made copies. I think it would be limited in them to start changing our slides. I think what we would have to do, because when we prepare our own slide, we actually make sure that the graying out is actually accommodated of the text. What we'll do in terms of this one, I don't know if it's easy for the members to have an electronic copy, or if we make the same copy, but we'll actually print it out in our office and then send it out exactly the same thing as we have, so that you can then read all the text. But we were asked to send the electronic copy. And I think it's just that when you make copies, it ends up in black and white in country. We'll do that and include it in the pen.
Chair, just a few more comments from me. What awareness programs do we use to get information down to each constituency level? We feel at the board level that perhaps we haven't done enough, but I would plead with honorable members to bear with us. We are, and maybe this might sound like a defensive comment or an excuse. If not, we recognize the shortcoming. We are growing and developing our communication strategies. We have a number of interactions, as the CEO, I think, has alluded to. We have a stakeholder forum where we try to reach out. Some of the challenges we have faced is the turnover of people who became familiar with our role in the departments, and then, you know, they leave, and you know, we need to go back. We recognize that as the board. We don't want to indulge in wasteful spending, you know, putting on a lot of adverts in the papers, but we recognize that we need to communicate more. The board recognize that, because if people know what you are about, then perhaps, and they know how to channel their problems and their worries you. You know, they say, oh, you say you are doing this and that. I've got this challenge. Can you help me? Then we would be able to interact better with people. So we certainly take that criticism in a constructive way, and it's something we are working. We are definitely working on and committed to work on. The breakdowns have been given. Yes, please, if you don't mind. Thanks.
Thanks. I've had a bit of a break, so I can talk again. There was a continuation from Member Groenewald on bribery. Briberies happen in places where it may be difficult to see them. Where our staff is involved, we've actually caught them, we've subjected them to disciplinary hearings, and we've actually dismissed those that were found to be on the wrong side. So it could happen either way. It could be a staff member that is trying to solicit a bribe, and like I say, we do catch them. But it could also be a contractor who says, look, I would like to get such and such a grade. That cannot work within the CIB. If you bribe somebody because you want a higher grade, it's not going to work, because
the Triple C's accept your application. It then goes through an evaluation process and then an assessment process, and then it ends up with management saying, the management within the registrar's problem saying, this one goes to the assessment committee. Every Monday morning, the assessment committee sits to look at all those files that have been submitted, and they must have gone through the process. So if the contractor bribes somebody to get a higher grade, it cannot work. What we've picked up, though, is that some contractors would then go to certain accountants to doctor their financials. And you find they submit to us a set of financials that are different from SARS, different from when they applied for loans at the bank. And we do pick that up. And we actually have a forensic unit that deals with that. And we have an investigations committee that will then discipline the contractors. Quality of building.
Sorry, before you continue, honorable members, what I will request the department to try to sum up so that we can jump to the last item of our agenda in order to get an opportunity to go to the meeting which is due to us after this at 2 o'clock. Is it taken? We're having a meeting after this afternoon of the chairperson. So is it taken to request the department need to sum up so that you can go to the last item? Thank you. Okay, over to the department, but we request you to sum up.
Okay, I'll just say a few things and then the chairperson of the board will take over. In terms of the risk committee, the risk committee is a subcommittee of the board. The responsibility of the risk committee was actually done by the audit committee, so it was always taken care of. But it's an internal matter. It's within the CIDP system. It's not dealing with what is happening outside. The issue of the bridge that collapsed in Mpumalanga, that should be handled by the CBE to look at perhaps the design. If not the design, if it's related to the construction, the client would, or there would be a recommendation coming from that side. But there's always be a consultant representing the client on that. The comments made by Dr. Rodney Millsport about the health and safety industry, it's about the industry. CRDP did a survey to have a baseline. Therefore, it's actually a positive statement that is accepted in our report about the industry, so the industry can then start fixing this. In terms of IT and 7 being launched, it's actually the 7 triple C's that we're talking about, the provincial offices, and the other 2 will be launched in 2 courts, like I explained. I would like to then jump to... I think a lot of these have been covered. I'll allow the chairperson to... Okay. It looks like we have to cover this one about Medupi Power Station. We have not been given information as to what is happening. I think what is happening is in the newspapers only. And again, we don't have any jurisdiction on a client, a specific client project that they're dealing with. We can't force them to do things otherwise as the CIDP. So if people are not being paid or are not being paid well, it's a matter that the client must actually sort out with the workers or the contractors. So it's actually beyond our control. I was trying to jump some of these. I don't know if we... Okay, how many black grade 9? The chairperson has referred to that. But this slide that came from May 2009 would actually show you that at grade 9 level, the total is 121. Out of those, we have 6 black owned. But I need to just explain something here. The grade 9 contractors, they have shareholding that is owned by the public. I could go there as a black person and buy 10% of their shares, and then next month I can sell them to somebody else. They would actually not know who it is owned by a black person or not. So that's the dynamism around grade 9 contractors. Marine Roberts has shares that are owned by management. They have shares that are owned by the public. So the public buys and sells all the time. So you have a lot of those. So when you say 6 against 121, the 121 may actually have public shareholders, while black people may actually have permanent numbers of owners in there. May I give over to the chairperson?
Honorable Chair and honorable members, I think we should really give a vote of thanks to you for listening to our presentation and raising the questions that you have raised. We We deal often with perceptions about our work, and it is important that perceptions are really addressed. Otherwise, people will hold these perceptions, and they become reality to the individuals. We would like to appeal to you, honourable members, to please see us, CIDB, not as an obstacle to the development imperatives of the state, but really as a facilitator. I would like to just appeal to you to perhaps cast your mind back to the pre-2000 year, where there was no regulation, where any time that a department put out a tender in the papers, they will be flooded out with perhaps 200 tender documents coming back, and of all kinds of capabilities. What the CIDB provides at the registration level is a kind of a quality assurance process that says to the government department that if you want to execute work at a particular value, that there is this pool of firms who have registered with the CIDB and are capable of executing the work for you. There is no intention whatsoever at the CIDB to exclude our black brothers from accessing opportunities. On the contrary, we as a board are engaging with the issue and the process, again working with the CETA, because we don't want to overreach ourselves and trample on other people's territory, but working with the CETA and working with provincial departments to structure a holistic process that recognizes the critical role of development that we are expected to play, and at the same time provide a regulated environment. We believe very strongly that people who adapt and learn to work in a regulated environment can prosper, that we will not hinder their competition, we will not hinder their competitive approach, but in fact that we will enhance them, because if you look at those firms that have been upgraded in our system, and some of them have gone on to receive awards, even the women contractors, they are very happy people, and they are quite satisfied. The complaints often, unfortunately, come from firms that haven't been able to access opportunity, and we sympathize with them. And whatever we can do to assist them in accessing opportunities, we are committed to doing it. But we see ourselves as an instrument of government to actually facilitate future development of our economy in this country. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. On the behalf of the committee, I think I'd like to thank you once more to come and participate with us. And we also believe strongly that working together we can still do more. Because our side, it's our part to just do an oversight on everything which is happening. Because our people did not stand, you are saying, the same like yourself, ourselves only 5 years. Each and every 5 years, we have to renew whatever. But we must make sure within the period of 5 years that we do an oversight work. So I'd like to thank you very much, all of you, to participate. And then before I close out, I'd like also to thank Meneer Yogi. As he Rakhom at the Blitz Khute and Al Maltese Paramasa. Thank you very much, all of you. And then but the committee will remain so that you can go to the Adas. Sorry, Mama.
Sir, then I still insist that we get the breakdown that we requested.
I think Mama Baba indicated that they will still go to send us some of the information. All committee members should remain, please.
Okay.